Monster Man, special episode, The Terror Bears.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Andrew. If you'd like to be like Andrew and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also receive the rewards for other levels, including all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. Just as a quick reminder, the Magonium Mind Murders is still funding on Itch, and my other zine, The Pamphlet Off Pantheons, has been included in a charity bundle to aid refugees from the conflict in Ukraine. If you want to check out either of those, follow the links in the show notes. All right. So, Andrew, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Andrew has asked me to take a look at four villains or monsters, depending on your perspective, from a scenario in the classic 1985 role-playing game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness. Now, this was actually the second role-playing game I played, I think, and the first one I owned. In my recollection, of course, this was a long time ago, when I was very young, I played Tunnels and Trolls at camp, and I wanted to buy the game, so my parents took me to the game store, but they didn't have it, and unwilling to leave empty-handed, I got the TMNT game. Now, this was before, or maybe just as, like, Turtle Mania was starting. The animated series had not yet begun, and I wasn't really fully into comic books until a few years after that in the late 80s. So I think that this may have been my first exposure to the phenomenon. Maybe some other kids at school were aware of it. I know some friends of mine had some of the black and white collections that were later, I think, reissued in color. So TMNT and Other Strangeness role-playing game was published by Palladium Books. It's based on the Palladium system that appears in other, maybe more familiar Palladium games like Rifts or what have you, and the TMNT version specifically, and I think what that means is basically the character creation system, was created by Eric, and I'm always worried that I'm going to say his name wrong, W-U-J-C-I-K, which in my mind is Wojciech, but I could be wrong. So maybe it's just Wojciech. Like, I do not know, and I apologize if I'm getting that wrong. The late Eric, let's say Wojciech, is best known for his design of the Amber Diceless role-playing game. But I think that, you know, the Palladium system in its, like, not just its intricacy, it is complex, but also it's bad and dumb in many ways. I don't want to get into it, but unfortunately it does kind of get in the way of playing this game as like a fun exercise in nostalgia, because a lot of things that don't need to be are very time consuming. I do think that a simplified version of this would not be too hard to create. Like, there could be a fan hack, retro clone or whatever, that somebody who isn't me could make. Anyway, there are a series of scenarios in the back of this book. Of course, the premise of the game is that you play mutant animals, a la the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the kind of default presumption is you fight crime, especially crime involving other mutant animals, whether as perpetrators or as victims. And we'll see that the ambiguity of that question, perpetrators or victims, is actually important to these series of scenarios. Now, scenario is a very strong word for the Terror Bears. It's essentially just a premise and a set of character sheets. The Terror Bears is a scenario in which four psychic mutant bears have escaped from a medical research facility, and they have, like, holed up in a suburban or, like, semi-rural neighborhood and are committing petty crimes basically just to survive, right? Just to get themselves the food and things that they need to live in, like, the house that they've occupied. And, of course, they're using their horrifying psychic powers to dominate and terrorize humans that they run into, and also to disguise the fact that they are basically teddy bears, which helps keep them away from the eyes of the authorities. And the PCs get wind of this and, like, go looking for them to try and recapture them or whatever. Now, that premise makes it sound a little more sensical than it is, because it's not accompanied by the full-page illustration illustration of all four Terror Bear characters, who have horrifying images of like skulls augmented by something that like represents their specific powers on their little tum-tums. Like, it is very clear that the Terror Bears are intended to be the Care Bears, but you know, instead of Love-A-Lot Bear and Sunshine Bear and whatever, these are Fear Bear, Pain Bear, Doom Bear, and Nightmare Bear. I feel a little bad for poor old Nightmare Bear. He reminds me a little bit of Judge Mortis from Judge Dredd. Like, he's just kind of Judge Death, but not as cool. If you asked him, he could give you a detailed explanation of how he's not the same as Judge Death, but everybody else has a real catchy upfront gimmick. So this spin on the Care Bears would have been very topical in 1985. Originally created in the early 80s, so like 1981, they get their own line of toys in 1983. They were originally greeting card characters, which is something I found out researching this episode. And then in 1985, they get their own TV show. I think there's an episode of The Toys That Made Us about the Care Bears, in which case I have seen it, but I just didn't remember any of this. So it's a great illustration. It really shows the character of the Terror Bears, some of them with like childish glee, some of them with real cruelty. And it also is by the creators of the TMNT, Eastman and Laird, and is dated 1985. So I wonder what the deal is here, because from watching that documentary, Turtle Power, I saw in, oh gee, which one of them? Not the long-haired one, the other one. I want to say that's Peter Laird. Yes, I paused the recording and looked it up. Peter Laird. In the later, there are a couple of cases in the book where the images don't like 100% match the text, and I wonder if what happened was that Palladium was given a big pile of Laird illustrations, or Eastman and Laird illustrations. I know that they had a very unusual art workflow. That means that in some of their early work, even they don't know who did the penciling, who did the inking, whatever, that they had a very fluidly collaborative style, or at least that's what the documentary said. Anyway, the point is that they may have been given a big pile of illustrations and then just like come up with scenarios or characters to match them. I don't know. I actually don't know very much about the history of the TMNT RPG. The impression I get is that Palladium Books' Kevin Ciambita might not be super helpful in his recollections of things. I don't know. I would be interested to know more about the history of the game. Unfortunately, of course, the author is no longer with us. Anyway, the Terror Bears. They're four little mutant psychic bear cubs. I mentioned their names are Pain Bear, Fear Bear, Doom Bear, and Nightmare Bear. They each have similar powers, but they use them differently and they have slightly different abilities. So for example, Pain Bear has bio manipulation pain, which he uses to inflict pain on people, whereas Fear Bear has read aura, which he uses to discover what people are afraid of. And their distinctive ability that they all have is the mind trap, where they like hit characters with this sort of psychic illusion, well, traps their mind in a kind of nightmare. So for Pain Bear, that would be the experience of suffering, of being tortured. Or Nightmare Bear would be literally reliving a nightmare that you've had, and so on and so forth. Doom Bear, in a very 80s or perhaps awkwardly contemporary spin, is obsessed with the possibility of nuclear war, which he's certain is about to happen. Now, in the canon of the TMNT RPG, he is correct, which is interesting, right? Like, the bombs are gonna fall and we're gonna have a post-apocalyptic future dominated by armed bands of mutant animals. Quite interesting, actually. I didn't think about that, but from a game perspective, Doom Bear's premonitions of the future are right. But here it's more about the kind of psychological pain that his belief that the world is about to end causes him, and kind of he sticks together with his friends because it's like the only way that he can try to keep them safe. The four bears have, and this is a weird sentence to say, but they have differing personalities and differing motivations, and I think this is sort of both one of the most interesting things about this scenario and one of the like greatest missed opportunities, because on the one hand, they have these different personalities, they have these different psychologies, but on the other hand, as I'm going to point out later on, I think that most of the ways that the scenario is likely to pan out, those don't really come up very much. So the pair's personalities and a definite kind of note of tragedy, this is very clearly inspired by like Claremont era X-Men, which of course is going on right at this time. And this that sort of combination of melodrama, parody, and an understanding of psychology that is pretty superficial but is sophisticated compared to like most comic books, and sophisticated enough for like serial adventure fiction aimed at teenagers, is very in line with that tone. And it sounds bad when I say it like that, but that's not a criticism. Those are types of characterization and types of I guess, world building that are appropriate to the types of stories being told. Okay, so this is great, but unless you specifically are interested in going back and playing old games from the 80s, which in fairness, a lot of people are, and you're willing to put in the time to make the TMNT and Other Strangeness game into a game that doesn't like have its charm wear off real quickly, which most people are not, we're looking at translating either the characters or the ideas of this scenario into another context. So how do we do that? I think if you are in a fantasy game, they transpose pretty well. You know, you, instead of a science lab, you just make them the product of an evil wizard's lab. And honestly, the lab that they were being experimented on in feels more like an evil wizard's lab than an animal research facility anyway, right? This is the kind of place where they were doing experiments on measuring suffering that accidentally gave bears psychic powers, and they managed to not notice that for several years. You know, so in some ways, making their powers magical will make them more comprehensible, because here we have to kind of doubly believe, right? First, that experiments on these bears turned them into basically like walking teddy bears. They can't talk. They communicate telepathically. They can't, I was going to say walking, talking, but they actually cannot talk, you know, with like little hands that can grab things and upright posture and whatever. You know, we have to accept that. And then we furthermore have to accept that they have psychic powers and like a culture, which might be a bridge too far. In horror games, they translate reasonably well as well. Like, subversion of childhood imagery is a classic element of a lot of different horror stories, you know, killer dolls, killer clowns, all that kind of thing. And it could work well in particular because you could have that bit where a young witness like tells the police that the attackers were teddy bears and nobody listens to them, which is not something that you would get typically in like a fantasy or superhero environment, because these are worlds where weirdness is on the front page. So, you know, even in a fantasy world where monsters are relatively uncommon, people believe that monsters are more common than they are. Okay, in fact, bugbears may not be very frequently encountered, but people are always terrified that there are bugbears and believe all kinds of incorrect things about them because, you know, an atmosphere of fearful superstition is part of the aesthetic of those kinds of games. So in your kind of modern day supernatural game, your X-Files or your Supernatural or what have you, the characters are typically in the position of being the people who believe in the paranormal in a world that doesn't. You know, a monster of the week or something like that. I think you could actually do a good thing with the Terror Bears. I do think that the structure of the scenario needs some work. And in saying that, I may be giving this scenario more credit than it sort of deserves, because the scenario doesn't really have a structure. It very loosely sketches out the idea of a plot, and sometimes that's all you need, but actually, that sketch is kind of underselling the material, in my view. Because here's what happens. The Terror Bears basically exist in an area where they are committing crimes, basically to sustain themselves. The PCs notice this weird story about how a group of tiny people, right, just like in trench coats and hats, robbed a bank or something. And then they begin to realize that this is probably some kind of mutant animals. They'll investigate. They talk to witnesses bit by bit. Even though the Terror Bears use their psychic powers to conceal themselves, the PCs will start to piece together that these are mutant animals. That puts them in their department. Then they'll start like figuring out, you know, you can like plot the locations of the crimes on a map and realize that they're only hitting targets within a relatively short radius of what must be their hideout. So then you can sort of filter the kind of targets that they hit. So, you know, all night businesses like convenience stores, gas stations, you know, but like places that they're opportunistically able to steal from to get money, food, and supplies. So then you stake out the locations within that region that they haven't hit yet. And then from there, you know, one of your stakeouts will pick up on them and you can follow them back to their lair and have some kind of shootout with them, which is kind of, I mean, it's fine. It's a very straightforward police procedural plot and you could knock it out in an evening. Nothing wrong with that. But what it does is it means that the big action of the game is essentially going to be a big fight with the Terror Bears in which they're going to use their mind trap powers on you, and then the GM gets to describe all the horrible things that you see in the mind trap. So under those circumstances, particularly because Fear Bear and Nightmare Bear both have very personal mind trap abilities that they target characters individually, this can be a good opportunity for characterization of the player characters, but we don't get very much out of the effort that the author has put into characterizing the bears themselves. Also, it's very weird. The entries for the bears are half useful and half absolutely useless. Like, it does not matter to me that these bears have an 83% fishing skill or whatever, or that they have no criminal records. Yeah, no doy, they're bears that escaped from a lab. They haven't been in the slammer. They're 4 years old and bears. Palladium character sheets are weird, is what I'm saying. So I think this needs some complications. So for example, the bears could be like working their way toward some kind of goal. Now, this isn't happening in the scenario specifically because the author wants to emphasize how childlike the bears are, sort of to generate sympathy for them. They're basically just stealing to survive. They don't really think beyond tomorrow. Even when they are not committing crimes, all they really do is like sleep, goof around, and watch television because they're basically little kids. I mean, they're smarter than, well, I'm gonna say they're smarter than little kids, but they're kind of not. They're pretty dim. They're tremendously psychically powerful, but in a sort of intuitive way. They're not planners or thinkers, with the possible exception of Nightmare Bear, one of them anyway, is a little bit sharper than the rest of them and is kind of the one that thinks about tomorrow, but not really about like the day after tomorrow. So this means they have no agenda, which is fine, but you're kind of closing some doors to yourself if you make that choice. I think that it's more interesting if you give them something to do, like, say, targeting one of the scientists from the lab where they were held. Or maybe the lab sends out a team of bounty hunter types to kill the bears and cover up their involvement. So the PCs on the one hand are like, well, we want to stop these bears from going around, like, trapping people in psychic labyrinths of their own worst nightmares. That's pretty bad. But on the other hand, we don't want a bunch of, like, cigar-chomping machine gun dudes to kill a bunch of monsters who, in the best kind of Marvel Comics-y tradition, are okay, they're villains, but they are also victims. Like, these psychic bears were done dirty by animal research labs. Also, Doom Bear and Nightmare Bear don't have evil alignments. Palladium's alignment system is a topic for a whole another time, but basically, they have kind of like, they're not good guys. They're just concerned about having fun and causing mayhem or the survival of their little group, their little bunch of bear pals, and they don't care about anybody else. Or not even that they don't care, but just that they put those things second. They are what I think, and it's been a long time, but what I think the Palladium alignment system calls selfish, which is to do with the fact that Kevin Simbita doesn't like the idea that there's such a thing as moral neutrality. This is whatever. There's a lot of people's personal hobby horses in these games. But my point is that Doom Bear and Nightmare Bear, they're not out specifically to do harm. Only Pain Bear is really absolutely evil. You know, Pain Bear, like, loves to torture and inflict suffering for its own sake. But even then, Pain Bear's like a maladjusted, self-loathing loner who doesn't even get along very well with the rest of the Terror Bears. This is the only people in the world that will have anything to do with him, and even they don't like him very much, because he's a creep. But, like, again, this is because of his, like, internalized self-loathing. Like, he was experimented on and tormented, so he realizes he must be bad, so he goes out and is bad. So, given that these bears are relatively, what a weird sentence, given that these bears are relatively, like, well psychologically developed in their profiles, certainly by the standards of, like, NPCs in a scenario that's like 4 pages long, we should have more opportunities to roleplay with them. I mean, why develop characterization for characters who, in the kind of presumptive scenario, aren't going to appear other than in a big fight at the end and like being followed around by detectives? So you could have like a neighbor kid befriend one of them, right? It could be like a Frankenstein of the Little Girl type of situation where like literally no one has ever been nice to Pain Bear before, right? Like not once ever has someone been kind to him. Even the other Terror Bears, like they're like a bunch of little rowdy idiots. They're not nice. That could be really cool, you know, because you could have that thing where the PCs will immediately be like, oh, I mean, that bear's a sadist. Like, what a weird sentence. That bear is a psychopath. We need to get them away from little Braden or little Jaden. Like, they can't keep playing Transformers together. You know, we need to go out there and put that bear in a bag. But of course, as soon as that happens, Pain Bear is going to be like, oh, a betrayal, eh? Who wants some biomanipulation pain? I may have an IQ of 9, but I got an ME of 24. Let's go. So there's something there, right? Like there is this tragic element to the bears, which at present is kind of not being used. And I think if you want to use them to their full potential, whatever game you have them in, you want to emphasize that. All right. And one thing that's interesting to me is if you look at the illustration, they are clearly breaking into a child's bedroom. There's like X-Wing wallpaper on the walls and stuff. But that's not what they're doing in the scenario. In the scenario, they're like sticking up liquor stores. So this is what makes me think that the scenario is based on the illustration. That he just said, well, here's some scary bears I drew. And the author went, well, I can work with that. In the same way that one of the other scenarios, Terror on Rural Route 5, we have a bunch of like commando pigs and stuff blowing up farms, right? Which is the kind of thing pigs might do. They resent being farmed. But the scenario is about them holding a bunch of hostages in a school. But there's not like a school in the illustration. It's all like grain silos. So, interesting. But I think all the cutesy stuff works really well because it emphasizes the ways in which the bears are kind of like feral children. Also, you could have one of the real bad guys. There is a kind of arching bad guy in these scenarios. This character, Dr. Feral, the genius of Biospawn, who is sort of a mad scientist who has a lab where he experiments on mutated animals, even trying to create more or trying to see how they work. And he's very much like, I mean, I submit to you that if you call your company Biospawn and you think that that's going to attract either customers or investors, then by default, you're a mad scientist. But so it suggests that he should like turn up whenever the player characters start to investigate a mutant animal because he, you know, if it gets into the media or whatever, he'll find out about it because he reads the papers and he'll want to come and experiment on it. And he may even like befriend the authorities because he's this rich guy who operates in society and he's like a legitimate businessman, whereas you're like a sewer dwelling vigilante. Okay, so extrapolating more generally to other monsters that have these elements. So I feel like this type of monster, this kind of almost like suburban folklore monster, works well in a world where monsters are comparatively rare or at least narratively framed that way. And what do I mean by that last part? So in some fantasy worlds, the widespread presence of monsters is part of the deal, right? There are trolls in the woods and goblins among the crags. I feel like the default D&D setting, implied setting, especially these days, is one such world. And I would keep coming back to it, but I was very struck by the part in Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus where you go to a tavern and there is the head of a white dragon mounted on the wall. And this is like a dive bar in Baldur's Gate. But in many others, monsters are presented as weird exceptions to the natural order, regardless of how frequent their appearance in the text is. So an example of this would be like Warhammer Fantasy roleplay, where the majority of people in the Empire, as opposed to other parts of the world, live their lives without any particular involvement with monsters. They're aware they exist, but it doesn't really come up very much. Although goblins may not be classified as monsters. But like, Skaven are gnawing under the cities of the Empire, and you know, most people don't even think Skaven are real. Which is a weird thing to think, considering what is real, but never mind. Another example of this, one that's kind of thematically similar to Wolfram, would be like The Witcher, where the main character knows about monsters, but that's almost one of his superpowers. Nobody else really knows all that much about them, despite the fact that they seem to be pretty commonplace. But, you know, they're not presented. People don't act like they're commonplace. So the monster model that applies here is maybe more like a comic book supervillain, and perhaps more specifically like an X-Men supervillain, right? In the X-Men, the kind of like the psychology of the character is sort of paramount, right? The bears would fit in perfectly in an X-Men comic. Like, if they weren't bears, but just like mutants who had escaped from a lab and were using their telepathic powers to terrorize people, but kind of because they didn't know any better and they had been brutalized by society, and some team of like spandex-clad, pouch-covered bounty hunters were being sent to chase them down, and X-Force or Generation X or whoever got into a big fight with those guys while trying to get the mutant kids to safety, even though they were bad guys, you know, and they wound up in the care of, I don't know, Dr. Moira McTaggart. Like, and you told me that was an issue of 1 to 3 issues of X-Men comics from the 90s, I would believe you in a heartbeat. Yeah, that sounds 100% like something that would happen in X-Men. And so the mutant metaphor sort like underlies a lot, although not all, of those villains, but also villains are treated as if, and this is maybe true in other comics, maybe more so than the X-Men, but villains are treated as if they are interesting characters whose motivations and backgrounds need to be studied, even though villains are very commonplace. But, you know, TMNT and Other Strangeness is a comic book game, and is a comic book in particular that emerged from the creators being, like, fans and also, like, fun makers of X-Men and Daredevil and all the other stuff that the cool kids were reading in the 80s. But I think that's what we see here, right? That point of view places the villain at the center of the mystery stroke adventure, and that's why the majority of these scenarios are nothing more than stats and backgrounds for the villains. Dr. Feral, the genius of Biospawn, has no narrative component whatsoever. It's just Dr. Feral, who he is, what he does, who are his henchmen, what is his equipment, etc. And I think that if you want to transplant these creatures into a fantasy game for use as monsters, you need to transplant that idea as well. I asked on social media, you know, the parents of my acquaintance, like, if you were making this in the 2020s, what would you substitute for Care Bears? And the answers I received were manifold, a bunch of things, including a lot of things I'd never heard of, but also a lot of people saying, well, the thing is that like Care Bears are still around. Care Bears and My Little Pony and Transformers, you know, those things from the 80s, are, obviously you would do Transformers, but like my point is toy brands from the 80s, many of them remain successful today. But if we were going to do it with a contemporary reference, the two things that seemed to be the most relevant were Peppa Pig and the Paw Patrol. And I feel like the Paw Patrol is maybe the better one, because the whole point about the Paw Patrol is that they're sort of figures of the establishment. So, you know, one of them's a cop, but the others represent the institutions of society, even if they're not, like, enforcing the law. So there you could definitely have a thing where these mutant animals are being set up as heroes, where they're being set up as like, oh, look, here comes the team of mutant animals to like rescue the people trapped in the burning building. Oh, good job, Officer Barkles, you caught the bank robber. But then actually, like, they're suffering and they want to get away. And then so they're like on the run committing crimes to keep their heads above water. And everybody's trying to hush it up because no one wants the world to know that like Officer Barkles is on a crime spree. But they also don't want the world to know that, like, Officer Barkles is on a crime spree because he's fleeing from, like, the abusive treatment that he received in the government mutant animal lab. So I think the fact that the Paw Patrol are, like, an institutional group, you know, gives you a nice structure where you get to flip it twice. So you start with, like, oh, here are the, you know, the Paw Patrol. They're out there, like, doing good, saving lives, cleaning up litter, whatever. And then you're like, oh, like, the Paw Patrol are terrorizing people with their psychic powers and, like, knocking over liquor stores. I knew it. I knew those dirtbags were up to no good. And they're like, oh, actually, the Paw Patrol are the victims here. And now we have to, like, team up with them or defend them from, you know, the black-clad night vision goggle dudes sent by Dr. Farrell, the genius of Biospawn. That's a scenario. That's a couple of sessions. Because of copyright issues, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game is no longer in print, sadly. But it crops up on the secondhand market. And if you can get your hands on a copy and, you know, perhaps there are other means to do so, then I recommend checking it out, because the character creation system is fascinating. The bones of the system are fine. They're just kind of D&D-ish. And then there's a lot of other stuff that I think I would probably get rid of. But I look forward to the day when someone takes the kind of basics of that system, pairs away a load of the Palladium Cruft, and sees that there's some fun to be had there. So that went on way too long because we're talking about a game that I enjoy talking about, and there's a lot of like cultural nostalgia elements for when I was a kid. But Andrew, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, remember that if you'd like to be like Andrew, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we will be returning to Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, so I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.